The recordings have started.
Thank you very much. Welcome everyone to this CCWG on the Housing Act Accountability Works to call. We have a pretty packed agenda today. We will be having our roll call as usual with those attending the Adobe Connect room. And at this point, I would like to on whether there is anyone that is not yet in the Adobe Connect room, but it's already in the other bridge.
It's Jordan here from .NZ, one of the CCNSL members. I'm only on audio for the first 15 minutes or so.
Thank you very much, Jordan. Noted. Anyone else on audio bridge? I think Barack Otieno is only on audio at this point. And is there anyone else on audio only? Great. So hearing no one else, we'll jump right into the topics of this call. And as usual, I would like to remind you of any updates that you want to do to your statement of interest. If you have any problems accessing the wiki to update your statement of interest, staff will be happy to assist you in achieving that task. And as usual, we also remind everyone to stick to the standards of behavior that we already are familiar with, we already know. And there are a couple of administrative items that we will be reviewing as well. We have the legal committee update, the second reading of the draft recommendation for the subgroup, the first reading of the final recommendation of the transparency subgroup, the second reading for the final recommendation of the human rights subgroup, the first reading of the draft recommendations of the jurisdiction subgroup, and then we will have a section for any other business. And we will also have a review of the next plenaries in our calendar, and after this we will close the call. So this is the agenda that we have for today. You can see that it's really packed, so we will be having a timer that will be set for 90 seconds because we know that many people want to express their thoughts on the issues that are going to be discussed today. So we kindly ask you to abide to the timer of 90 seconds and make your interventions as concrete and as short as possible so we can benefit from as many participants as possible during this call. So next agenda item is the administration issues. And for that, I would like to hand the floor to Bernard Tukot so he can walk us through the administration topics that we have in agenda. Bernie, you have the floor.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Excellent. Thank you. Hello and welcome, everyone. I see Cavus has his hand up, so maybe it's something you want to deal with before I do this, Leon?
I'm sorry, Bernie. I love that bit.
Cavus has his hand up. Maybe it's something we should deal with before administration?
Oh, yes, surely. So, Cavus, do you have the floor?
Yes, Leon. I'm sorry to ask the floor at this very beginning. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everybody. Leon, you and your distinguished co-chairs and our all distinguished colleagues, we should understand that we are dealing with difficult subjects. Sometimes we have disagreement with each other. Sometimes we dispute with each other. But in no way we should insult each other. In no way we should make an allusion to each other in one way or other. In no way any insinuations to each other. In no way any interrogatory statement. I have seen that this is not admitted. This is unacceptable. People should be calm, quiet, and not emotional. This is not in the benefit and interest of the ICANN or internet community. please read the email from some people. I don't name them. And in reply to Tiago, in reply to Farminder, and the way that they use the terms, the language, insinuations, illusions, and allusions, and so on, is not in a good and friendly manner. Please kindly, as usual, remind the people, if they do not correct that, we will raise and file a formal objection to the ombudsman to rectify the matter. But at this time, we don't do that. We just want you kindly mention the people. Be quiet, calm, not emotional. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kabus, for this. And John Farquhar, where we remind everyone of the standards of behavior at the beginning of the call. And just to let you know, for the record, our charter indicates that when we see some kind of behavior that is not in line with the standards of behavior that we have in ICANN, the cultures have the ability to make a call, a private call, to any person that is not abiding to the standards of behavior. So, of course, this first call to order is made privately, and that's why it's not seen, of course. But rest assured that we do take things very seriously, and we do make calls to the different participants that sometimes are perceived to be going or crossing the line of the standards of behavior. So that is just for you to know and to share with the rest of the group. But yes, thank you for this reminder. So I will now...
I'm sorry, Leon. It may not be intentional, but it is emotional. I don't take it intentional, but I take emotional reaction. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kabus. So now let's keep moving on the agenda items, and I'll go back to Bernard so he can walk us through the administration items. Bernard, you have the floor.
Thank you. ICANN 60, just a reminder, our face-to-face is Friday, 27 October, 0830 to 1700 local. For those who will not be attending in person and you wish to attend remotely, facilities will be available, and that is 0430 to 1300 UTC. There is also a high-interest presentation on Workstream 2, Monday, 30th October, 10:30 to 12 local time, so right after the opening meeting of ICANN 60. That's for remote participants, 0630 to 0800 UTC. As noted in the agenda this week, we need to have one rapporteur per subgroup present at this session to answer questions from the community. The focus of that high-interest session is to answer questions from the community. So please, I've received a few confirmations from rapporteurs that they will be available. If all the subgroups could confirm that they will have a rapporteur available, if there is a single rapporteur and they're not available, could you also inform us so we can take appropriate steps? Also, we're asking for people to confirm by the end of the day tomorrow if they're who's the rapporteur and if they will be there. In cases where there are multiple rapporteurs, we'll be having everyone up on the front stage, and we really can't have everyone, or it's going to get a little too crowded. So we would ask the groups where there are multiple rapporteurs to pick one, please, and advise staff at the same time. So that's for ICANN 60. Are there any questions? Not seeing any, we'll move on. ICANN 61. Reminder, we'll hold our usual pre-conference face-to-face on 9 March 2018, as someone pointed out. In the funding memo, I made the mistake of not changing 2017 to 2018. Obviously, it's not 9 March 2017. It's 9 March 2018. Funding applications are being received, and I think we are very used to – sorry about the noise. Everyone's very used to the process by now. It seems to be running well. And just a reminder that we'll be closing applications on Sunday, 19 November 2359. We have to submit the final list to ICANN by Monday, 27 November. So just a reminder to everyone, if you're applying for travel funding from Workstream 2, please keep these dates in mind. And that's it for administration, Leon. Back to you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Bernie. And next agenda item, it's an update on the legal committee. And we sent some questions to ICANN Legal back some weeks ago, but we haven't had any reply. I followed up with Sam Eichner on the issue, but I haven't had a reply from Sam as well, so I'll keep you posted as soon as I have any reply from my colleague as to the status of the questions that were submitted for reply from my colleague. So on our agenda is the second reading of the draft recommendations for the Ombuds subgroup. And for that, I will now hand the floor to my co-chair, Jordan. Jordan, you have the floor.
Thanks, Leon. Good morning, afternoon, evening, everyone. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you, Jordan.
Great. Thank you. This is an easy task for me because what I will do is invite Sébastien Bachelet to take the floor as the rapporteur to update the group on the progress of the Ombudsman report since our first reading a week or two ago. Sébastien, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Jordan. I guess I don't know what is the next slide, if there is any next slide on the Ombuds report. Yes. And we have made very few changes. I am not sure that it's a change from the last discussion, but do you want me to repeat what it was, the changes from the previous version of the document when we were not able to find the first reading, or do we consider that I have already read all that last week and I don't need to read it again? I am open for both. What you
think? I think Sébastien, I think the slides, and Bernie Turcotte will interrupt and advise if I'm wrong. And by the way, for the captioning, I'm not Leon. Leon is the other coach. My name is Jordan. The thing to, I think what the slides have done in the red is to just pick out the key changes to the report since the last version, the small updates that were made following the feedback. Bernie, can you update us if that's not right, or if that is what the slides do? Then, Sébastien, I think the thing to do would be to just highlight those small updates for the plenary.
These slides are the same slides we had 11 October presentation, which showed the changes from the 28 September discussion, which we updated. Back to you.
Ah, okay. So, Sébastien, I think it's over to you, but my instinct is that people have worked through this once, they're reasonably familiar with those changes, and that working through them in detail now would not be necessary. But if there were any particular points you wanted to highlight, you could do that, and then we could test the will of the plenary if there are any final comments before moving to confirm the second reading. So are there any points that you would like to really emphasize?
Yeah, thank you very much, Jordan. Sébastien Bachelet speaking. I think here we will go quickly to the different changes, as Bernie says, from the previous version. Here it was just to confirm that there is no currently change on the how the ombuds will work and what is in charge of in the big picture. If we can go to the next slide, please. We agreed to take away KPIs and leave timelines, and the question of subject to practicality was also agreed by everybody since 2 weeks. If we can go to the next one, I guess it's recommendation 8, the one where we have the most discussion. And I think at the end of the discussion last time, we said that it will be useful to have this sent to for public comments. But I wanted to take this opportunity to read one small part of what was written in the report of the external reviewer, because I think it could help to understand. It's on page 5 of the final report, and I will read the number 3, strengthen independence. There is a clear need to strengthen the perception of the ombuds function independence. We, that's the external reviewer, recommend the addition of a ombuds advisory panel independent of the board to take some of the oversight work currently done by the governance committee and to add a system of guidance and support for the ombuds. We also suggest some detailed change to the ombuds employment. And I think it's explained why we have this proposal on the table, and we try to catch what group wanted us to change from the first discussion on that issue. And seems that it was agreed at the last meeting, but therefore here is the second meeting. May I have the next slide, please? If any, okay, I guess we are done with that. And I am open to any question, but I am in your hands, Jordan.
Thank you, Sebastian, for that. And we talked through the sort of genesis of these updates last time. So I'd ask if there are any comments about this ombudsman recommendation that relates to this. Caboose, I see that your hand is up.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Sebastian. I raised a question at the previous meeting on the first reading, and Thomas Rickert told that, wait, we don't have time, we will discuss it, and we will come back to that. The question that I raised was, what are the areas that ombudsman shall not or should not intervene? It is not clear in the report. It has been given free hand to intervene, and in all aspects, the area that it should not intervene at all. So this is not clear from the report. I don't want that you draft something, but you have to mention that now, whether you have discussed that or not. So I don't think that he should go, or he or she in future, whether who will be the ombudsman, beyond the responsibility, mandate, and the scope, and intervene in all aspects, and doing something that is not expected to do. So please kindly clarify this issue. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kevin.
Yeah, go ahead, Sebastian.
Go ahead, sorry. No, Jordan, sorry. It's your call, not mine. Sorry.
I was just going to ask the staff to scroll us back to the previous slide, please. The previous slide to this one. One more. Yeah, that one. Thank you. Caboose, I think this slide has the clarification that is intended. This report isn't meant to recap and to completely reconstitute the ombuds function. So it doesn't need to set out in all the details the things that it does and does not cover, because those things are not changing. So anything that the Ombudsman covers today, they would continue to cover. Anything that the Ombudsman does not cover today, they would not cover. If there is a lack of clarity in the rules today about what the Ombudsman can and cannot cover, that could have been something that was raised in the process of the subgroup's work to date, and it could, but that time has passed. If there are issues like that, the best way to sort of raise those and get those on the table, I think, will be through the public comment period that will commence on this report once we have a second reading and put it out for public comment. So if there's no change from this report, and if there are concerns in the way the scope of the Ombudsman is defined today, the excellent opportunity will be to raise those in public comment, because then the working group can work through them and maybe provide some further clarification as we move to a final report. Sebastian, would you like to add anything to that? Or if you disagree, feel free to do that as well.
Yeah, thank you very much, Jordan. No, I agree totally. I just want to explain that it's a little bit like, I would say, a pyramid. We have the bylaws who talk about the office of the Ombuds. We have the Ombuds framework. And as we decided that we will not get into changing any of those first pillar of the work, we just add on top, it's an important work, the external review, and on top of the external review, we add our rewriting of the proposal or the recommendation of the external reviewer. It's why we are really on the top of the pyramid here with a very short document, and if we want, and it was the work we was done within the subgroup, we take into account all the part of this pyramid, but we don't ask everybody within ICANN during the public comment to read all of that, but just the changes that we are suggesting with those recommendations.
Thank you, Sebastian. Kavus, does that answer your question? I see your hand in the room.
Yes, not exactly. Listen, dear co-chair, we are representing government, and we are under the instruction of our government. We don't agree that ombudsman get into the area that is outside the instruction we have received from our government and intervene like that. They should really, he or she in future should be really respecting us. We are not private sector. We are representative of government, receiving instructions from our government, and he or she would not be allowed to intervene and criticize the way that we act. We are responsible to our government and no one else. We are not responsible to ICANN. We are not responsible to ombudsman. So I don't think that we should agree to any instruction outside what we receive from our government. Is it different from the other constituencies, so they should be respected. I'm sure that the bylaw has already respected this situation, and we need to really respect the integrity and dignity of the people, integrity of the government, and the instruction government given to the staff representatives. If they say something, it should not be questioned by the ombudsman. Thank you.
thank you, Kavus. The only suggestion I can make at this point is that if the way the ombudsman function is structured in the bylaws is causing concern to you and your government or to other governments in the GAC, then it would be super helpful for that to be flagged through the public comment process here, because the problem that we face is that we can't really address that problem now without a bit more of an understanding of what the challenge is. And the best place to lodge that is in writing in the public comments, so it can be given proper and serious consideration to the issue that you're raising.
I'm not talking on behalf of my own. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks. Thanks for that clarification. Sebastian, I see that your hand is up.
Yeah, just to I agree with you, Jordan. I will not say better, but if Kavutz wants to point me to some lack of clarity in some part of any document regarding the government, I will be happy to help with that. But I think that your proposal to take that into account within the public comment period will be the best way. But if in any case I can be help of any help on that, I will. Thank you.
Thanks, Sebastian. Okay, there are no more people in the queue, so I'm going to move to a sort of formal call for a second reading. Are there any objections to the second reading of the Ombudsman report and putting it out for public comment and community input? Are there any objections? Okay, I hear no objections. So we can consider that second reading passed. Thank you, everyone, for that discussion and process. Thank you, Sebastian, for navigating and rapporteuring this area of the CCWG's work. I am now in the lucky position, and so are all of you, of hearing more of my voice, because it is my responsibility to co-chair our next agenda item, item 6, on the first reading of the recommendations of the transparency subgroup. Sorry, I just been advised by staff that I forgot to make the point that the Ombudsman report as finalized will now be placed on the record for public comment opening soon. Back to transparency. The final report is available. The first reading is here, and so is Michael, the rapporteur for this. So, Michael, I'm going to invite you to take the floor and work the group through the final report of the transparency subgroup. Please go ahead.
Thanks very much for that. Can you hear me?
We can. Thank you.
I'm showing up on the transcript, so I'm taking that as a yes. So hi, everybody. So this is the first reading of the final recommendations. In preparing, in responding to the public comment period that was previously done, there were several kind of small wordsmithing and clarification changes, as well as three or four major ones. So we're going to go through the changes that have been made. Could we see the next slide, please? Okay, so we're jumping right to the recommend. I think that went too forward. Could we go back one, please? There it is. So in terms of the more substantive changes, the first was about the so-called duty to document. So this was revised in consultation with ICANN Legal. Just to clarify how this is going to work out, there were some concerns raised about the time commitment that would be related to this, and we wanted to clarify that it really is, we're just trying to bring something in that's in line with good administrative practice in order to provide a paper trail for major decisions. It's been rewritten, as you see in front of you, so that it is clarified to say that the DIDP should include a documentation rule, which means that if significant elements of a decision-making process take place orally or without a lasting paper trail, participants should document the substance of the conversation and include it alongside other documentation related to this decision-making process. So that's just mainly to clarify how it's meant to be done, as well as to assuage concerns from ICANN Legal that this would impose a single documentation standard across every aspect of ICANN's work, because they made the case that different aspects of ICANN have different documentation rules, which is a fair point. So basically all we're saying is that as a general rule, there should be documentation of decisions. And ICANN signed off on the revised wording of this, or ICANN Legal did. The next change is a more minor one, which is about process and requests. It basically just says that ICANN should impose clear guidelines. The DIDP will impose clear guidelines on process and requests. That was in the previous one, but that was just a minor wordsmithing change. Could we move to the next slide, please? Great. The next change I'd also rule as minor wordsmithing to clarify concerns that were raised during the comment period about what's being expected through the DIDP. It says that the DIDP will commit to comply with requesters' reasonable preferences regarding the form of the information under request if ICANN already has that information available in the requested format or can convert it to the requested format relatively easily. And so the idea there is we don't want ICANN to have to scan thousands of pages that they only have on paper if people request it. The idea of this recommendation is that if they have different formats available, you can request the format that you want. Regarding recommendation 8, which is also a fairly minor change, ICANN should direct requesters with as much specificity as possible to information publicly available that is subject to request. And so we clarify that to show that in their response, ICANN should direct the requesters. And that's also to respond to a concern that people were going to use the DIDP as kind of a broad research tool, which is obviously not, or to say, you know, to have ICANN collate information for researchers on their disclosures, which is not what's intended through the DIDP. And so that was to ensure that all we're saying is that if a person makes a request and the information is already available, which is grounds to deny the request, ICANN, rather than just saying it's not available, should direct them to where the information is available. Next slide, please. Okay. Where an exception is applied to protect a third party, the DIDB should include a mechanism for ICANN staff to contact this third party. There was a comment made that there was ambiguity in the previous phrasing as to whether the individual making the request would be contacting the third party, and that's problematic and impractical for a bunch of reasons. So we're clarifying that ICANN staff is the one that should be doing that. Number 15 relates to transparency at ICANN Legal. So this is, unfortunately, probably the one area, it was really the only area that we were, I think, unfortunately unable to find a good avenue forward. Previous drafts had included specific recommendations on how ICANN Legal should proceed, should invoke attorney-client privilege, and would include rules around how that should be done. Unfortunately, there was disagreement within the subgroup on this, and ultimately some people were uncomfortable with moving forward with any narrowing of attorney-client privilege that didn't have buy-in from ICANN Legal. So I spoke to ICANN Legal, and although some of my early conversations with them seemed to suggest that they were open to this and this is something that they already do, unfortunately I had a later conversation with them and they were pretty resistant to anything that would have imposed any kind of clear rules or standards on how this would be done. So unfortunately, for this specific recommendation, we ended up basically just saying that we ended up basically just pushing this forward and saying there should be future processes to expand transparency at ICANN Legal, including through clarification of how attorney-client privilege is invoked, and hopefully this will be done as part of a future process. Next slide, please. For contracting information, we sort of broadened it out a little bit rather than the rule that was mentioned previously that you can see below. Now the recommendation says that ICANN's contracts should be proactively disclosed or available for request under the DIDP wherever possible. but that the DIDP should allow ICANN to withhold information subject to a non-disclosure agreement, and that such an agreement should only be entered into where the contracting party satisfies ICANN that it has a legitimate commercial reason for requesting the NDA, or where information contained therein would be subject to other exceptions within the DIDP. So this is basically just introduced the idea of greater transparency in contracting while respecting non-disclosure agreements that have already been signed and making sure that ICANN has enough latitude to enter into non-disclosure agreements where there's a legitimate interest there. So this has been clarified further as well. Next slide, please. And the only other minor recommendation that's been made is that in terms of expenditures on political activities, I believe that the previous wording was for anything over 5,000, and that's been shifted to anything over 20,000. So we can go to the next slide, but I think that should be it. Nope. Okay. So with that being said, are there any comments on these revised recommendations?
Any comments or questions for Michael from any of the participants? Thank you for taking us through them, Michael. A little bit of keyboard action in the chat window of thank yous for Michael for the presentation. I do realize it's a little while since this has come before us in the plenary, but the changes certainly don't raise any eyebrows on my part. If there are no comments or queries from Michael, I will formally move to ask whether there are any objections. Oh, sorry, there is a question in the chat. It's from Steve Del Bianco. I'll read it out just so it's available to everyone who's just listening. Are there any recommendations where the group had consensus but decided not to make the recommendation because ICANN Legal was opposed? So, Michael, could you briefly respond to that question from Steve?
Yes, certainly. So the only area where we got significant pushback from ICANN Legal was on number 15 on transparency at ICANN Legal. So other than that, there was support on all the other recommendations. On that one, within the working group, people expressed unease at moving forward with a recommendation that didn't have ICANN Legal's buy-in. So I'm not sure, so it's probably not accurate for me to say that there was consensus in the working group because there were, but it's also not quite accurate to say that people in the working group were arguing for ICANN Legal's position. So it's a bit of a weird situation where the expression among people in the working group was that they were uncomfortable moving forward with this, that their response depended on ICANN Legal's response. And I'll also add that there was also a challenge in terms of timelines where, unfortunately, it was taking quite a long time to get responses back on these issues. And because we're running kind of close to the deadline to getting things included in the final report, that was also going to be a challenge where if we were going to try to push things forward through resistance at ICANN Legal, there would need to be another consultation, which would push us beyond the time, the timelines that we had in front of us. Robin notes in the chat that it seems inappropriate for ICANN Legal to block transparency at ICANN Legal, which I kind of agree with, and I think that this is kind of an unfortunate, it's kind of an unfortunate result for that reason. But of course, there were people that were supportive of ICANN Legal's opposition, that agreed with ICANN Legal's opposition to this, within the working group and within the consultation, which it's only fair to point out.
Great. Thank you for that, Michael. Thank you for responding to those questions. I think where we're at now is that these have been through a public comment. This is the sort of first reading for the revised report. I hear the way that you've described that concern about ICANN's legal responsiveness, and I think I might just refer that to Co-Chair Leon Sanchez, who has been managing the legal committee and who's about to be raised to the giddy height of the ICANN board. There's been a pattern of responses taking quite a long time from ICANN Legal, and I think that's an issue that we should address again with the organization at the Abu Dhabi meeting. But that is a slight tangent. In the end, the question now is whether there are any objections to a first reading of this final recommendation report from the transparency subgroup. And I'll call for any of those objections now. You can use a red cross on your Adobe Room if you are objecting, or you can say so. You can use a green tick if you're not objecting, if you like. Look, thank you, everyone, and thank you, Michael. I'm going to declare that a successful first reading of these recommendations. We will come back for a second reading, I believe, at the plenary in Abu Dhabi, if not before. So thank you very much, Michael, for working us through that. I am now going to turn the chairing back, he says very slowly while he signs the list, to Leon Sanchez to take us through the second reading of the final recommendations of the Human Rights Subgroup Report. Leon, please take the chair.
Thank you very much, Jordan, and congratulations to all those who have contributed to having where we are now after this first reading of transparency. And I would now like to call Neil Stimmer to walk us through the second reading of the final recommendations of the Human Rights Subgroup. As you might remember, we made a successful first reading in our previous call. There were a couple of points that needed some rewording and wordsmithing that were taken offline and that were agreed by those participants that were reviewing the issue. And I would like to ask Niels if he could help us go through this second reading, which merely would be confirming what we had on the first reading and having a look at the final wording that was agreed by the parties that that reviewed these last tweets that were made to the final report. So, Niels, you have the floor.
Thanks so much, Leon. Friends, colleagues, comrades, I can report back very happily that based on the mandate and the task that the plenary put back in the hands of the subgroup and some people, Greg and Jorge specifically, but also David McCauley and others have put in some great work, and we managed to iron out a text to which we can show to you, and I hope Bernie has that on a slide, or else I can read it to you, is that we have a compromise proposal, which we would insert in the consideration section of the document, which would add one footnote, which reads that the UN Guiding Principles for Business and Human Rights is a non-binding document developed to provide guidance for business organizations. And secondly, the text was will be inserted in the considerations document. To the extent that ICANN, the organization, is a business, it could consider certain aspects of the guiding principles as a useful guide when applying the human rights core value to its business activities. As you can see on the slide here as well. I see Sebastian Bacholet's hand is up. Sebastian, please come in.
It's an error. Sorry, I have made a mistake. Sorry.
No problem whatsoever. So, except for that, there are no changes since last week. And the changes since between last week and the one before the previous were just one grammatical correction and one inclusion in another footnote that including but not limited to mentioned rights instruments. So very small additions, so I hope with this we can conclude the second reading of the document, which also means that the which would also mean, I hope, that the dissenting opinion will be dropped and we can continue with a full consensus on the human rights framework of interpretation and considerations document. Thank you. Leon, back over to you.
Thank you very much, Niels. So, at this point, I would like to call for any comments or any objections to this second reading. Okay, so seeing none objections, I would like to thank everyone. Oh, I see one hand raised, and that is Cahoos. Cahoos, you have the floor.
Sorry, I hope that I have not interrupted your good intervention. I wanted to express my sincere thanks for a considerable amount of effort, devotion of Niels. He tried to resolve any last minute or any last lines or last kilometers or last area in order to have a consensus. He is really a most competent and peaceful and a really kind person that he made a lot of effort, and we are very happy to have him on board, and he, his activities are very highly appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Cahoos, for this very constructive comment. And at this point, seeing no objections and no further comments on this final report on human rights, I would like to call this as approved in second reading, and I would ask staff to ready this final report on human rights for the next steps as per our judicial procedures. And I would also like to thank everyone that has intervened in this work. Of course, the rapporteur of the group, all the participants, and all the members of the different constituencies, including, of course, the GAC, who have been pretty much constructive in this effort. And I see Greg Shutton's hand up. So, Greg, would you like to do any comments?
Sure. It's Greg Shutton. I just wanted to note that the slide isn't quite the compromise language. The language in the footnote was not meant to be repeated in the text. And right now, looking at the slide, that's what's happening. I think that was just an error in kind of transferring the document onto the slide. So I hope that's understood. The footnote is actually a footnote to the first reference to the guiding principles in this part of the document. So just to clarify that, but the intent and result I think is the same in any case. Thanks.
Excellent. Thank you very much for noting this, Greg, your appreciation is correct. It was a mistake made by staff. It's been noted in the chat, and it's on the record that it was a mistake and an involuntary mistake made by our staff, who sometimes have too much in their hands and, of course, are not error-free. So thank you for pointing this out, and we'll make sure that the final text is as the subgroup has agreed. So thank you again, and since we have a quite interesting topic up next, and for that, I would like to handle the floor to my co-chair, Thomas Rudick.
Thanks very much, Leon, and good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. This is Thomas Rickert speaking. We're now going to discuss the work product of the jurisdiction sub-team. And since this is the first reading of the report, there will be quite some time needed for the rapporteur to guide you through the recommendations that the group has reached consensus on. But before I hand over to Greg, the rapporteur, I would really like to make a few opening remarks. And first of all, I would like to take the opportunity to thank both Greg as well as the sub-team for very, very hard work for months and months to come up with this report. So I think, you know, this has been possibly one of the tougher subjects to work on. And I think you've done a remarkable job converging the various views to consensus recommendations. Now, I do appreciate that the recommendations that the group came up with did not go far enough for some. I think that if we went around the table, you would hardly find anyone who would not like to have gone further with the recommendations of the CCWG, not only in the area of jurisdiction, but even more so in other areas that we've been working on. But as you know, we are working against time limits, and we have promised to the community that we would work in Workstream 2 in a timely fashion and present something to the community. We've already gone into overtime, and I think now it's a time for us to bring our sub-team's work to closure, put things out for public comment, finalize, wrap things up in one report, and then conclude this part of our work. And so I think that, you know, the frustration of some that we did not possibly achieve as much as we would have loved to when we embarked on this journey is shared by many, not only in the CCWG, but in the wider community. But we have to live with the realities that we're working in. And therefore, I would like to anticipate some of the comments at this point, at this early point of the jurisdiction agenda item. We have two dissenting opinions that have been filed. I understand that the discussions surrounding these are still in progress, so we do not have final language of these dissenting opinions at hand. And these focus on two aspects. They focus on process as well as on substance. And I think we should have the discussion on substance after we've given Greg the opportunity to show us through the substance of the report. But I would like to quickly comment on some of the procedural issues before we continue with the deliberations on the substance of the report. Also, there have been two questions by Parminder, who unfortunately can't be with us today. And he's asked two questions, one of which related to the possibility or the lack of a possibility for our group to directly request changes to the registry agreement and the registrar accreditation agreement. And he sort of requested a clear yes or no answer from the co-chairs, which I will offer right now. As many of you will know, the contracted parties have contracts with ICANN, and these are binding legal agreements between two parties. and therefore it is not possible for a third party, and this CCWG technically is a third party, it is not possible for a third party to directly influence the content of such legal agreements. And therefore, we must leave our recommendations to be recommendations that can be considered according to the principles in those two agreements that I've referred to, which allow for changes to these agreements. So that's with respect to the first question. And the second question was relating to limitations or to a clear choice of the different options that Greg will present to us with respect to choice of law and venue. And I think that this question, although Parminder asked the co-chairs and the CCWG to respond, I think is best placed for Greg to respond to when we come to Q&A later, or he might even choose to respond to that point when he presents the recommendations. Now, there has been some criticism with respect to how consensus was formed and allegedly the process that was conducted by Greg to confirm support or consensus for the recommendations was flawed. And I would like to go on the record on behalf of the co-chairs that we fully support how Greg has handled this ably. He has taken a lot of effort to allow for everyone to make their voices heard. He has asked on the various ideas that have been proposed whether there is sufficient traction for these to be carried further. He has, as we've discussed at length in Johannesburg, he has rightfully abandoned some recommendations or some proposals that did not get sufficient traction to likely reach consensus within the sub-team. And when consensus for the recommendations was determined, that was not done in single meetings, but in accordance with the working principles that we've been using in the CCWG, i.e. in two readings, and he has asked for objections. And actually, there was no substantial objection that would not qualify the level of support as rough consensus. I should also note that the final decision for consensus on the report, not only the jurisdiction report, but any report or recommendations that come from the sub-teams, is confirmed only at the time when the plenary had two readings and the co-chairs determine whether there is consensus or not. And as you know, or probably you don't, but if you choose to, you can read that in the charter for our group, there is a process for objections with the co-chair's determination of the presence or absence of consensus or other levels of support or objection for recommendations. And we would request that those who take issue with the consensus determination be patient for a little more. And if they think that the co-chair's determination of consensus is flawed, then they should deploy the procedure laid down in the charter of our group. Then, in the dissenting opinions that we received in draft form, at least in the forms that we got to read them, as I noted earlier, there seems to be further debate and work surrounding these statements. Some of these do not respond directly to the recommendations in the jurisdiction sub-team, and they also contain various inaccuracies. And we would like to announce that in case that those statements are being upheld, the co-chairs will reserve the right to append a corrective note to the report with respect to these minority opinions or dissenting opinions. We should also note that if the jurisdiction report does not pass first reading on this meeting, it will be difficult that it passes the second reading on the face-to-face meeting on the 27th. And if it fails to achieve support or get support there, then it will likely not be considered in the final report. So, as I mentioned at the outset, unfortunately, we did not have time to do everything that individuals in our big team wanted to see handled. Some would have loved to go further, but according to my firm belief, and I hope that this is shared widely in this group, the sub-team has reached consensus on very, very important points. And if you read the report, when you listen to Greg's presentation, please consider carefully whether you support these recommendations. And if you support the recommendations, please do not object to the report. If you object to the report just because you think it doesn't go far enough, then you automatically object to the recommendations in the report, and that might jeopardize that the report will be included in our final report. This is not to threaten anyone to express their views or to object as they see fit, but I just caution that everyone should consider what to support, and as I mentioned, I think that the recommendations that the jurisdiction sub-team has come up with are remarkable, important, and unprecedented improvements to ICANN's accountability system. Let me conclude by saying that there are other places where further improvements that we can't work on in the framework of this work can be worked on. We have mandatory reviews, the ATRT reviews and other reviews, and those places can be used for discussing issues that could not be reviewed as much as some would have liked. So let me stop here and hand it over to Greg for the presentation of the draft recommendations from the sub-team. Over to you, Greg. Thank you.
Thanks. It's Greg Shatton for the record. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you all right.
Yes, we can hear you all right.
Okay. So this first slide you see merely notes where we stand with regard to procedure. This is the first reading, and then there'll be a second reading, hopefully, at the face-to-face on the 27th of October. So I don't know if the slides are synced, but we can move on to the next. This comment has been added at the request of one of the participants. I'll just briefly read it. During the preparation of this recommendation, the subgroup considered an email where a registrar declined to do business with a potential reseller based on the registrar's policy of not doing business with people with Iranian passports. The subgroup also learned that this registrar, which had been registering domains for a number of Iranian nationals, refused to continue to do business with them. Okay, well, you can just take it right off the slide afterwards. The subgroup has concluded that to the extent these instances are related to OFAC, the concerns raised by these instances are adequately covered in the recommendation already without any additional changes. This is not in any way a comment on the validity of these particular concerns. The subgroup will consider creating stress tests based on these scenarios. Next slide, please. So the first set of recommendations relates to OFAC sanctions and to licenses. This has been explained, the background of this has been explained in detail in our report, but just very briefly, the Office of Foreign Asset Control, part of the U.S. Department of Treasury, administers certain sanctions that the U.S. government has in place for national security and other reasons. And some of these sanctions relate to all of the citizens of particular countries, and licenses are required in order for transactions to take place with those citizens or residents. an individual license is basically applied for almost online and is a relatively lightweight procedure. A general license, which we'll get to, is a whole different kettle of fish. It is a regulatory change. In any case, our first recommendation relates to the registrar accreditation application. And ICANN has terms and conditions that apply to the application to become an accredited registrar. And that particularly says ICANN is under no obligation to seek OFAC licenses, and in any given case, OFAC could decide not to issue a requested license. This uncertainty could discourage residents of sanctioned countries from applying for accreditation, the concern being that if ICANN is under no obligation to seek a license, that an otherwise qualified applicant might not be able to get the license. Therefore, the subgroup recommends that the above sentence should be amended to require ICANN to apply for and to use best efforts to secure an OFAC license if the other party, that is the applicant, is otherwise qualified to be a registrar and is not individually subject to sanctions. During the licensing process, ICANN should be helpful and transparent with regard to the licensing process and ICANN's efforts, including ongoing communication with the potential registrar. So that is the first recommendation within the OFAC set. We can move on unless there are any questions or comments. Next slide, please. This is our second OFAC recommendation. In the 2012 round of the new GTLD program, it was difficult for residents from sanctioned countries to file and make their way through the application process. The applicant guidebook states, quote, in the past, when ICANN has been requested to provide services to individuals or entities that are not specially designated nationals, or SDNs, but are residents of sanctioned countries, ICANN has sought and has been granted licenses as required. In any given case, however, OFAC could decide not to issue a requested license. This raises similar concerns to the first recommendation. Therefore, the subgroup recommends that ICANN should commit to applying for and using best efforts to secure an OFAC license for all such applicants if the applicant is otherwise qualified and is not on the SDN list. ICANN should also be helpful and transparent with regard to the licensing process, including ongoing communication with the applicant. Any questions or comments? If not, we can go to the next slide. Please. Did I have to say please? Well, that's good. Probably part of the standards of behavior.
Greg, let's just pause for a second. Thomas here. Greg, let's just pause Cavus for a second. Thomas raised, so I suggest that we take Cavus's question.
Okay. Please go ahead, Cavus.
In the recommendation saying that if it is not otherwise qualified, who makes that qualification? Which entity criteria is used to make or otherwise that qualification? Just a clarification. Thank you.
I have to admit that I haven't been involved in the registry or registrar process. I've had some involvement in the new GTLD, registry application process, but not in in the registrar process. So I'm certain that there is a process that ICANN goes through to determine whether a potential applicant to be a registrar is qualified to be a registrar for reasons that have to do with things, nothing to do with OFAC, but have to do with other things such as financial stability or technical competence or whatever they may be. But I'm assuming, and this has been not put in place by me, but by the subgroup as a whole, that there is a standard process rather than they just rubber stamp any application and hand it over and say, now you're a registrar. You know, if there are registrars on the call or those who have represented registrars in the application process, they could add some color to this. But if I've covered it fundamentally correctly, perhaps we can move on. So we have the third OFAC recommendation, which relates to application of OFAC limitations by non-U.S. registrars. It appears that some non-U.S.-based registrars might be applying OFAC sanctions with domain name registrants and potential registrants based on a mistaken assumption that they must do so simply because the registrar has a contract with ICANN. Non-U.S. registrars may also appear to apply OFAC sanctions if they cut and paste registrant agreements from U.S.-based registrars which contain OFAC groups. While ICANN cannot provide legal advice to registrars, it can bring awareness of these issues to registrars. Therefore, the subgroup recommends that ICANN clarify to registrars that the mere existence of their RAA with ICANN does not cause them to be required to comply with OFAC sanctions. ICANN should also explore various tools to remind registrars to understand the applicable laws under which they operate and to accurately reflect those laws in their customer relationships. I'll have to pause again. I see Steve Del Bianco is typing, but no hands. So Steve says, this is an excellent recommendation. Thank you, Steve. I will not disagree. Let's move on to the next slide. Please. Gotta get that please in. Okay. General licenses. As I mentioned before, OFAC general licenses cover particular classes of persons and types of transactions. ICANN could pursue general licenses to cover transactions integral to ICANN's role in managing the DNS and contracts for internet resources, e.g., registries and registrars entering into RAs and RAAs, privacy proxy accreditation, support for ICANN-funded travelers, etc. This would enable individual transactions to proceed without needing specific licenses. A general license would be developed with the U.S. Department of the Treasury, which must amend OFAC regulations to add the new license. This regulatory process may be a significant undertaking. Therefore, the subgroup recommends that ICANN take steps to pursue one or more OFAC general licenses. ICANN should first prioritize a study of the costs, benefits, timeline, and details of the process. ICANN should then pursue general licenses as soon as possible, unless it discovers significant obstacles through the study or otherwise. If so, ICANN should report this to the community, that is, report significant obstacles to the community, and seek its advice on how to proceed. If unsuccessful in getting a general license, ICANN needs to find other ways to remove friction from transactions between ICANN and residents of sanctioned countries. ICANN should communicate regularly about its progress to raise awareness in the ICANN community and with affected parties. I'll pause again to see if there are any comments. Seeing none, we can move on to the next slide, please. So that completes our set of OFAC recommendations. Then we move on to a set of recommendations relating to choice of law provisions and choice of venue provisions in certain ICANN contracts. The first relates to choice of law provisions in the registry agreement. The subgroup identified several alternative approaches for the RA, and these could also apply to the RAA, so we won't discuss that separately in detail. The approaches are the menu approach, the California or fixed law approach, the carve-out approach, the bespoke approach, and the status quo approach. These are discussed on the following slides, and next slide, please. And here I'd like to clarify, I think, what was one of the questions that was mentioned by Thomas in his introduction. Please note that in discussing the menu approach, here the first sentence says the subgroup supports approach. The subgroup does not say this about any other approach. So perhaps to put more of a point on it, we are recommending that a menu approach be considered. However, there are a number of implementation details that are obviously beyond the scope of our report. So the subgroup supports a menu approach where the governing law would be chosen before the contract is executed from a menu of possible governing laws. The menu needs to be defined, and this could best be left to ICANN and the registries, in other words, the parties to the agreement. The subgroup discussed a number of possible menus, which could include, first, one country from each ICANN geographic region, or possibly a small number of countries from each ICANN geographic region. In addition, the menu could also have on it the status quo, because some registries may prefer to leave the choice of law silent. As it currently exists. So they should be allowed to do so, to make that choice. Next, it could include the registry's jurisdiction of incorporation, whether or not it's on the short list of countries from that geographic region. And last, it could also include each of the countries in which ICANN has physical locations, which are, in essence, additional jurisdictions for ICANN. The subgroup has not determined what the menu items should be, but believes there should be a balance between the advantages and disadvantages of having different governing laws apply to the same base registry agreement, which likely suggests having a relatively limited number of choices on the menu. The subgroup has also not determined how options will be chosen from the menu. For instance, the registry could simply choose from the menu, or it could be required to make this a negotiating point with ICANN. So that is the menu approach, and that is the recommended approach of the subgroup. Let's now at the other approaches. Next slide, please. Before I look at these. Are there any questions or comments about the menu approach? Seeing none.
This is Thomas Gregg. Maybe you can briefly speak to the point made by Parminder, who asked whether just maintaining the status quo is an option that is a perfectly possible outcome.
Thank you, Thomas. The subgroup does not recommend that the status quo should be the outcome for all registry agreements. The subgroup recommends that in the menu approach, one menu item could be, but does not. We are not recommending that it must be the status quo. Recognizing that the status quo may indeed be the preferred choice of both parties, but we have a recommended outcome, which is the menu approach, which would not result in the status quo for any agreements other than that where both parties actively chose to do so, if that was on the menu.
Thanks very much. I guess that's exactly the clarification that Parminder is looking for. Let's make sure that it's properly noted. Thank you.
Thank you. I see a question from Steve Del Bianco in the chat. Greg, you said the subgroup recommends menu. What are the second and third preferences of the subgroup? We did not discuss fallback positions. The feeling was that the menu approach itself was sufficiently flexible that in its subsequent implementation, it could include anything from a very limited number of countries, say one per region, or be more expansive. It could include or not the status quo, for instance. It could include or not the home country of the registrar. So we believe that within the menu approach, there are enough options, and it really got the strong support. There were, I should say, members of the subgroup who definitely supported the status quo approach, and I think we may have heard from David McCauley. But there was no preference of the subgroup for anything other than the menu approach. So the possibilities, one is the California or fixed law approach. A second possible option is for all registry agreements to include a choice of law clause naming California and U.S. law as the governing law. I should mention that our report goes into the advantages and disadvantages of each of the five possible approaches, but I won't do that here. We don't have time, and it's not on the slides. Next is the carve-out approach. A third possible option would be a carve-out approach, where parts of the contracts that would benefit from uniform treatment are governed by a uniform law, such as California, and other parts are governed by the law of the registry's jurisdiction, or chosen from a menu. Then there is the bespoke approach, where the governing law of the entire agreement is the governing law of the registry operator, so it's fit in each case to the registry, hence bespoke. Last is the status quo approach, which would be simply to retain the status quo, which is to have no governing law clause in any RAA. Unless, that, of course, it's individually negotiated between a registry and ICANN, as could happen today. Any questions here? If not, we can move on to the next slide, please. Oh, I see Phil Corwin has a question. Phil, please go ahead.
Yes, Greg, and just for clarification, it's the same question I typed into the chat. What's been the experience with the status quo approach when legal disputes have arisen between ICANN and a contracted party? What governing law has actually been applied, given that nothing was designated in the contract?
Thanks, Phil. There are really two or three instances in which this would occur. One is in a formal litigation. Another is just in an interpretation discussion between the parties, and last might be an arbitration. My understanding is that in litigation, in the absence of a choice of law provision, you apply the conflicts of law rules of the jurisdiction and the court that you're in, which may or may not end up that country with the law of the jurisdiction, depending upon what the conflicts of laws rules say. Given that this is mostly, I think in most cases where it has been an issue, and it has not necessarily been an issue in most cases, It has resulted in California law determination. I'm not aware of any case where a determination was made that another law besides California would apply.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
And David McCauley recalls in the chat that the subgroup reviewed a lot of litigation, which is all of ICANN's litigation, and this was simply not an issue in most cases. And as to interpretative disputes between or discussions between individual registries and ICANN, your guess is as good as mine. If you're not in the room, you wouldn't know. And again, choice of law may or may not make much of a difference in interpreting a contract. You know, in specific instances, it may. Most of the time, it probably doesn't. So moving on, we have our next slide. As noted, the options for the RAA in the choice of law provision are essentially the same as for the RA and should be similarly handled. Next, we have the issue of choice of venue provisions in registry agreements. And we focus specifically on the registry agreements because under the RA, disputes are resolved by binding arbitration pursuant to ICC rules. The RA contains a choice of venue provision stating that the venue is Los Angeles, California, as both the physical place and the seat of the arbitration, which also makes it the kind of the law of the arbitration as well, or lex arbitri. When entering into contracts with registries, ICANN could offer a list of possible venues for arbitration than imposing Los Angeles, California venue. The registry that enters into a registry agreement with ICANN could then choose from a venue menu which venue it prefers at or before the time of execution of the contract, or similarly, it could be a negotiating point with ICANN if that's a determination that's made. The idea is that this would be a menu choice, as with the previous two types of questions or issues. Anything on this point? Seeing none, we can move on. Please. This slide notes, as Thomas noted, that the government of Brazil and Parminder Jeet Singh have filed dissenting opinions and other comments. And I think that is actually, I think that is the last slide, but let's see the next slide. Obviously, it's AOB, which is not my slide. So we'll pause here, see if there are questions and comments.
Thanks very much, Greg, for this presentation of your report, or of your team's report. Maybe you can go on mute because we're getting an echo from you. I see that both Cavus's as well as Benedicto's hands are raised. And before we go to the queue, let me just acknowledge and appreciate and show appreciation for the hard work of the governmental representatives in the jurisdiction sub-team. And I know that the Brazilian government in particular and Benedicto and his team are troubled with some developments in ICANN. And so, you know, I guess these must be very challenging days for you. I would like to confirm, though, that you are highly respected and members of this team, and that we really appreciate your hard work. There might be different viewpoints on various substantive issues. I guess that's quite natural in an international and diverse environment such as this, but rest assured that we really appreciate all your inputs and hard work, high-quality work on this team. Let me also note that we recently saw a quite encouraging development in the jurisdiction, the human rights subteam, where changes to the recommendations and improvements to the recommendations have been made between readings. And certainly there is always the possibility for the subteam and individuals from the subteam and the plenary to put their heads together, continue the discussion, and come up with proposals that ensure broader consensus than what we've heard in the first reading. That is certainly not to introduce more new ideas, but if there's anything that can be done to broaden the consensus in the report, that possibility certainly exists, and it did exist for the human rights subteam. It does exist for the jurisdiction subteam as well. So let's now move to the queue. Cavus is first. Cavus, please.
Thomas, two things. I think we should distinguish between gratitude and appreciation to the work that has been carried out by the rapporteur and the comments or opinion on the recommendation and or on the output. There are two different things, and we should not mix them up. If there is any opinion regarding the recommendations or regarding the report, that does not necessarily mean that automatically apply to the activities, works, and times and efforts made by the chair, which is appreciated. So we have to make this distinction. This is point one. Point number two, opinion or views of the Brazil has been also commented or supported, I would say supported, in GAC emails and in some other general emails. So perhaps sometimes should be left aside that until they say within some X days, people could join this opinion and express their views with respect to that. So until we go at minimum up to the second reading or maybe extended time. So leave the people to look at the statement of Brazil. It's quite an extensive document, quite a very useful information, so need to be carefully read by the people, and other people may join that formally. They have been joined in the GAC email or mailing list that may join formally. So I think it is necessary that this time to be set aside, allowing the people, if they wish, to join that statement. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Carlos. And next is Benedicto and Tiago. I'm not sure who's going to speak, but the floor is yours, please.
Thank you. This is Benedicto for the record. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you all right.
Thank you. Well, first of all, thank you, Thomas, for your very kind words in regard to this. And I think I should also say that we acknowledge that in spite of differences we may have, that we acknowledge the incredible amount of work that you and your team and Greg and all the members of the subgroup invested in this, and we want to value what we have been able to achieve in spite of, again, some differences we may have. At this point, I have already posted something on the list, but I'd like to state that as of now, in the present context, if this is the report that should be accepted at the end of the day, we will oppose the report. We will have minority view dissenting from its recommendations. Not exactly because we oppose the ideas that are there, but because we think they are not sufficient to meet to address the key concerns that were expressed even from day one, from the first phase of the transition. We made clear some concerns we had. So in spite of anything taking place now in ICANN, I'd like just to reverse that our position relates to a process that started over 2 years ago. So we do not see some key concerns addressed in the report in this format, in its present format. So both sets of recommendations taken together, we don't think they address, and they should not be considered, in our view, as an adequate response to the call for these groups. So for the record, we will, if this is the final report, we will oppose the report, we will oppose recommendations, because we think they are not sufficient. In regard to if this is the case, and I say this because when we circulated this statement on the basis of the draft report, I'd like to stress this draft report that was circulated, we thought there might still be room, or either at the subgroup or the CWG, or at the CWG to further consider some ideas and have a final outline of the report. But I have since received some very strong reactions saying that those ideas that we are proposing could not be entertained anymore. So if this is the case and that we are wrong in our assessment, there might still be some room to discuss. So if this is the final report in those two steps of recommendations, we will certainly object. And we want to avail ourselves of our rights to file a minority view that we understand will be included in the report. Of course, by doing this, we intend and we take fully on board comments that were made on the list that fill some text that we included in our statement and our piece of documents. They were not, I think they were not fit for that kind of document as a minority view. We would certainly be happy to get rid of all everything related to process, anything that can be found to be as personal visions or anything of that sort. We want to focus on the substance, but to make clear view, the report as such does not address key concern health, and that therefore we avail ourselves to find this minority view. And in that regard, I'd like to seek your guidance, either from Greg or from you, Thomas, when would be the right time, the deadline we have to issue this minority view. I took from you that maybe the final outline of everything would be wrapped up at the face-to-face meeting. I'm not sure if that would be, let's say, the deadline we'll have to file our minority view to have this final outlook, or if we should do it before. And just if I can just make a small comment, I think that maybe part of the problem we have here is that we are trying to address a very, very complex issue, one issue that, in our view, is maybe the most important issue to be addressed in this working group. One that almost derailed the final stage of the transition process. You may recall in Marrakesh that was, and this was postponed for now. So I think maybe one of the main difficulties is that we are trying to address very complex issue within very, I would say, a tight deadline. In other fora we call artificial deadlines. We do not see a reason why such a discussion of such importance could not proceed and unfold with the same level of importance and the same level of energy. Why we should stop now? I think maybe we could have some kind of incremental gain, but again, if the understanding is that this is the final report, that this will respond to the call that was made when working to work out in regard to jurisdiction, we'll certainly oppose because we are convinced it falls short. It is far, far too short in regard to what we would consider to be a minimum acceptable. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Benedicto. Great comments you made, and I appreciate your willingness to reconsider procedural aspects and actually focus on substance. With respect to timing, We had a lot of comments over the last couple of years with respect to artificial timelines and that we should allow for our group to have more time to discuss. What we've done for many months now is actually count backwards from the end date of this project, factor in public consultations at various levels, board approval that is required, approval from chartering organizations, an extra public comment period for inconsistencies and the like. And as you know, as co-chair,
sort of responsible for making sure that we get tangible results at the process, and therefore I think you know we can try to reassess things with staff, but I think that we have gone as far as we could, and the deadlines that we announced to the group were not arbitrary, but they were actually with the intention to giving the sub-team and the plenary as much time as possible, yet bearing in mind that we need to get this done by next summer. And you will know that we've already gone into overtime. So if we don't get our work finalized, including all the procedural aspects thereof, we are not certain whether there will be more time, more budget, or more staff support. So I think we need to make sure that we conclude this part of the work in a timely fashion as announced. But that does not mean that there is not further room for discussion. I mentioned the example of the human rights sub-team that has made progress and converged more towards consensus between two readings. So that is one possibility. Another opportunity would be the public comment themselves, where those who are not happy with the report may be the actual recommendations or the breadth of the recommendations as such can be raised, and those comments will be analyzed and will give an opportunity to actually further work on the substance of the reports. And the third opportunity I alluded to earlier is actually to use the opportunities of reviews and continue the discussion in the framework of periodic reviews. So I think that's my immediate response to your question. I encourage my fellow co-chairs to chime in if there is any other aspect that I haven't yet spoken to. But before they might come in, let's hear Cavus, whose hand is raised.
Thank you very much, Thomas. Can you hear me, please? Hello?
Yes, we can hear you. Yes, we can hear you.
Do you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you, Cavus. There seems to be an audio issue. Operator, can you check whether Cavus's line is working? Cavus, you tried to speak. We could hear you, but obviously you could not hear us. But let me just ask whether there are any other colleagues on the call that want to speak, so we could take their interventions first and then go back to Cavus.
Hello?
So let's just Thomas. Cavus.
Do you hear me?
Yes, are you back?
Yeah.
Yes, we can hear you. All right. Please go ahead.
I was muted from long distance by somebody, and then Thomas. Thank you very much for the goodwill. And also, I take this opportunity. I told that the first statement that we appreciate efforts and devotions of Greg. He made a lot of works, and that has nothing to do with any opinion. So I think that the consensus more or less emerged before the human rights framework after a lot of efforts made by Jorge and others and so on and so forth. We did not have any face-to-face meeting that we approved in the second meeting. So I don't think that 27th of 26th, I don't know, you said 26th, 7th, I think it was 26th, doesn't matter. The 26th, 27th of October is not definitive to finish this second meeting. It could be extended for 1 week after, for 2 weeks after, allowing to have more
discussions were concentrated with the goodwill, without any emotions, without any tough words, and so on and so forth. So I suggest that I think we have come to this point with all issues with consensus, and perhaps we should be more and more close to the consensus and remove all of these fights among the peoples and so on. So I said that we should not put a definitive date for the second reading at a face-to-face meeting. You try, but if not, it is not definitive. 2 weeks more, I don't think that makes the issue so critical. So please kindly, co-chair, consider that. You may not reply right now, but please consider that. If you, I'm sure that Benedicto and others, there are several people supporting Brazil on this. It is not only Brazil. There are several people supporting in the email. And we are also considering now, we are consulting our government to get support of that and many others. So perhaps in order not to have this division, I request you kindly to possibly extend the second reading to be not 26 or 27, but 1 or 2 weeks after, allowing 2 or 3 weeks for further work. And the work of Jorge was an example that he finally agreed to get the consensus of the people for the framework of the human rights. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Cavus. And just a general remark that we have introduced the timer so that everyone gets an opportunity to speak. So can please make sure that your statements are limited to something in the area of 90 seconds, if you could. Benedicto, your hand is raised, and then we will ask for more interventions, and after that I will try to wrap up.
Yeah, thank you. I'll be very short. Actually, just to further clarify what I said before in regard to the official deadline. I think this issue is very complex, and you don't solve complex issues in maybe 1 or 2 years. You need to require a process for this, because it needs to mature. There are political realities that sometimes repeat for a number of years. So what I'm saying is that I don't think to allow 1 or 2 or 3 more weeks or 2 months will be enough. I think that something that we could maybe entertain would be to see some incremental action, but to acknowledge that jurisdiction is a file that needs to be under continuous scrutiny. It may be the object of standing effort on the part of ICANN. And I think what should guide us is the vision that was transmitted by Net Mundial, that in the end we are aiming at having an international organization that is truly international, not intergovernmental, but a multi-stakeholder organization. This is something totally new, I understand. I fully concur with those that say maybe it's unrealistic now, it's not political. One thing that would really concern us is to lose that side and to accept and to be conformed with something very limited and say this is the end of it. That's the notion that I would like to convey. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Benedicto. Just before we move to Jorge and then to Greg, let me try confirm that I understand your message correctly. Would an idea that you could support be to include some language in the overall report, not only for the jurisdiction subteam, but it can be on the jurisdiction subteam's work, but in the I was thinking of something of general nature in the report that, you know, constant improvements to ICANN's accountability should be undertaken in order to allow for consideration of topics that could not be addressed during Workstream 1 or Workstream 2, for that matter. We can certainly work on exact language for this, but can you just confirm or clarify whether what I've outlined is sort of in line with what your thinking was?
Well, thank you. Well, it's rather difficult maybe to react as of now, because I'm just saying something that occurred to me right now. We have not given enough reflection to that. I think maybe if we could find a formula that would show that some continuous work would go in a very strong way, not something that would be left This is something that could be entertained. This is something we'd like certainly to look into with colleagues. But I want to be very clear and for the record that as of now, for this particular meeting, in the context we are discussing, we are opposing both the report and its recommendation in its present form because we think they do not address adequately the issues they should have addressed. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks very much, Benedicto. So my takeaways from this are you object at the moment. You do not see any chances for making improvements on that in the next weeks or even months, and that but that you would be willing to work with us on language for continuous monitoring or continuous efforts in the area of accountability. And I think that's certainly something that we should keep an eye on and include our include in our report if we find language that is agreeable. Jorge. Jorge, in case you're speaking, you might be talking to a muted microphone.
Hello. Good evening. Do you hear me okay?
Yes, we can hear you.
So you don't hear? Okay. Thank you so much. This is Jorge Cancio, GAC Switzerland, for the record. I think, and I'll be very brief, that what you were outlining and together with Benedicto's comment is really the perhaps what we need is this extra time to work out a common language that the fact that there are issues of key importance to the stakeholders that are part of this community and who have a legitimate interest. And on the other hand, we most probably cannot be able, due to the time constraints, to really resolve all these issues. We have made some progress on very specific ones, the OFAC and the applicable law issues, but there are many other issues related to jurisdiction which still give rise to concerns, to issues, to interests, and I think that we should use definitely this extra time in the coming weeks to work out this common agreed language, and hopefully this will help to get these first steps through the process, acknowledging that these are not the final steps, but are part of to go on. So I leave it by that, and thank you very much for the, I think, constructive atmosphere I was
Thanks very much, Jorge. You were slightly breaking up on me, so I hope that the rest could understand your intervention all right. But I got the message. We need to close the queue after Cavus. We have 7 minutes left on this call. Request for an AOB from Alan Greenberg, and we still need to end the first reading of this exercise. So can I please ask the remaining speakers to be very, very concise? Greg, over to you.
Thanks. I'll try to be as concise as I can possibly be. The it strikes me, and I'm listening to what Benedicto said at first, that this does require considerable further consideration. That I think that if we were to try in one or two or a very few weeks to go from what is in Tiago's or Brazil's submission, we probably would not have the time for the delicate and nuanced discussion that could lead to consensus on such a complex topic, which would likely lead to a result that many would find unsatisfactory. And therefore, I think it's best in many ways to view the work of the subgroup in part as groundwork for continuing discussions that are, in essence, bigger than a subgroup and bigger than an enhancing ICANN's accountability working group. I do note that in our final report, we contemplate an annex or a supplement where we will preserve and publish all of the non-consensus documents, including the list of proposed issue recommendations that did not turn into actual recommendations. So as much as possible, along with the wiki and the email list of the group, this hopefully will provide fertile ground for further discussions, and I think finding a way to acknowledge that, that this is an inflection point in consideration of these issues, and that work was done that will be valuable in the future, I think is a good way to try to look at this. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Greg. Let's now hear Sebastian.
Thank you very much, Thomas. Sebastian Bachelier is speaking. I think that the last different speaker build, I guess, a way to go forward. I would like to suggest that we accept this report, this first reading of this report, and that we, in the same, at the level of the CCWG, not of the subgroup, we do what Thomas suggests, that try to find a wording to say that we need to continue the enhancement of ICANN accountability. The Workstream 2 will not be the end. And as you say, there are different review team, and ATRT3 is not meant to be for the moment for that, but maybe if the Workstream 2 says that ATRT3 can handle this topic, could be one way to go a little bit further. And therefore, we don't need extra time, because we have extra time for the moment. We are dealing with finishing each subgroup work, and we will have some time to deal with the full package. Therefore, I think if this time we can find a way to write this about continuing enhancement of ICANN accountability, it will be a great way to go. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Sebastian. And last in line is Kavus. Kavus, over to you.
Yes, I understand Sebastian saying that you accept the first reading with this descending opinion to which many or several others may associate. But what I suggest that we postpone the second reading. Still, we should use all possibilities. We should show degree of flexibility, not to be so restrictive and so on. It is a good idea that we go out of these things with some consensus. So I request the chair, co-chair, to consider the matter to see what are the maximum deadline that they could provide in order to maintain the timeline, and also in order to have some degree of consensus. So I want to go between the two areas, not having many months, not rushing to accept that, but accepting maybe the first reading with this dissenting, to which many people or several people may join, but postpone the second reading and allow the time, I don't know how many weeks, but still you can work it out. There is a possibility, and we should not be so restrictive and so limited by the deadlines that you have established already. We are dealing with a critical situation. This is different from any other issues, this jurisdiction. So we prefer to have more time to have, and we have this in many other areas. Additional time would be useful. Please, co-chair, kindly consider and not close the issue by now. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Kavus. And thanks for all your comments. we have 1 minute left on this call for the official time window that we allocated to this call. And we take good note of the proposals that have been made orally, as was made in the chat by Olga and others. And what I suggest doing is, as we've been requested, the co-chairs will consider the arguments. We will review our plans and timelines and get back with a response to the mailing list in writing. I understand that Greg's suggestion got a lot of traction, and there were some good ideas that we will further analyze and then report back to the group. Rest assured that we're taking these issues, the time issues, very seriously, and we will get back to the mailing list shortly. Let me now ask whether there are any objections to call this a successful first reading. We do note Brazil's or Benedictus and Tiago's objection that's already on the record, but are there any further objections to declaring this a successful first reading? I see support from Chera. I do not see any objections so far. Let me pause for another few seconds.
Yeah, just to remind that Parminder has also made some very clear objections. Maybe even if it's not in the call, should take that.
Okay, yeah, let's note Parminder's objection. Cavus, is that an objection? Because we don't have time for
no,
more
it's not an objection, but I said that other people may join to Benedicto, leave them time, because we received his full text of intervention or opinion few hours ago, and we have to consult, and so people may join him. So please don't take it only Benedicto or Brazil have. Other people may join to that. And I don't want to destroy the first reading. First reading with this and any other comments that may join Benedicto's or Brazil's comments. Take him with that sentence. Thank you.
Thanks, Cavus. Our usual work practice is to see whether there are objections on the call. I understand that Brazil is seeking supporters for its dissenting opinion, and that is perfectly fine, but that is separate from the objections during this phase of making this a successful first reading. And I'm now happy to declare this a successful first reading, given the low level of objections. And we have an AOB. And before we go to that, and I'm announcing it to give Alan the time to unmute his microphone, let me thank Greg and his team again for this excellent piece of work. So kudos to you. And over to Alan for his AOB.
Thank you very much. I have a very fast AOB on AOB, a very fast unmute on my phone. Just a brief comment that, as you all know, Leon is being seated on the board at the end of the ICANN meeting in Abu Dhabi, and the ALEC has chosen to replace him effective at that point, and we have appointed Tijani Benjema to be the co-chair representing ALEC.
And I think if we were all unmuted, we would give both Leon as well as Tijani a big hand, a big round of applause. We already wholeheartedly welcomed Tijani to the team, and for full transparency, Tijani is already working with us to allow for a smooth transition, yet another transition, co-chair transition. And, so you can expect a smooth handover between Leon and Tijani. So thanks very much for that positive note, Alan. We already discussed that the next plenary is going to be during the face-to-face meeting in Abu Dhabi. And that leaves me with just declaring this meeting adjourned and thanking everyone, including staff, for their hard work and for their patience. This has been a long and successful meeting. Thanks so much. Bye for today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.